The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Rain Stop Play. There's been a lot of drama in the cricket world over the last couple of days. We've had Mankad debates as India whitewashed England. We've had Surrey winning the county championship. Domestic four-day league in England, which Zach already looks pretty sad about just there. But for the focus of this pod, we're just going to be looking at what has been a thrilling series so far. A four-game series out of seven have been played. England's tour of Pakistan. It's a historic tour. It's been fantastic to see England back in Pakistan. And the cricket, to be fair, has completely lived up to the billing. It's been thrilling. I cannot wait to dive into the games. I'm joined by Zach. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm good, thank you, Glenn. How are you?
I'm right, thank you. I'm good. And a special guest, our resident Pakistan fan and expert, Hamad. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
Yeah, okay. I'm a little bit tired, to be fair, but I'm really excited for some chat about this series. So that's gonna just push me through. Yeah, so very quickly, just looking at how the series has gone so far. So as I said, we played four of the seven games. It's a long series, right? And when we saw seven games were announced, maybe there was a little bit of apprehension about how the drama could be sustained. It felt a little bit too elongated. Like I appreciate why England are sticking around for a little bit longer, but I was a bit worried that it might be maybe a heavy kind of result going one way going into the fifth game, which is tomorrow. But no, it's been fantastic. So the first game, as listeners are probably aware, England won by 6 wickets. Pakistan just coming up short with the bowling there. The second game was really unbelievable. England set what you thought was a pretty competitive 199 for 5 and chasing 200. Pakistan did not lose a wicket. They won by 10 wickets, chasing down over 200. Baba and Rizwan making it look an absolute breeze. Into the third game, England won this one by 63 runs after setting a mammoth total of 221 for 3. Really great cricket played by England, and Pakistan were pretty much blown away by that batting attack. And then we come into what I would say has been one of the most thrilling T20s, maybe arguably of recent years, in terms of a way a game seesaws. I don't want to give this a little quick summary because it deserves much more than that. Hamad, how did Pakistan win this? And Zach, how on earth did England lose this?
So I would simply say Pakistan won this on a prayer and more. simply on a prayer and more. It's what we call God's plan. it was just meant to be for some reason, but definitely the closest game you could ever win is just like 3 runs getting into the last over and just some extremely good fast bowling right at the death. Harris Rauf, take a bow, everything. And for the most part, at the end of the Pakistan innings, we were like, nah, this is not gonna happen. It's nowhere there. But then you had up front 3 wickets being taken down quickly, Mohamed Hasnain doing his extremely good taking the contest to the England team, and then we managed to cap a little things, even though you still had it's just a relay race of England batters just coming in and just being like, yeah, we can hit, we'll keep hitting, and won't stop, and then it just kept going on until and pretty much Dawson was the one that pretty much took the wind out of at least Pakistan's sails with his over with Hasnain, where he took sort of like, I think, 23, 24 off of him. And the poor kid, he was just crestfallen after that. And then Harris Ruff comes in. He's like, I got this.
This is how it's done.
This is how it's done. I got this. And then Chuwick, he gets Dawson out. And then he takes Ollie Stone out right at the next ball. And he keeps it down. And even though you're facing a situation of four runs in six balls, which is, you would expect that to be done, but the simple panic that had set in on the England side, it's just that suicidal single that had been taken at the start of the 19th over, and just Sean Mazzuth finishing it up.
Absolutely. There was just so much chaos on the pitch, Hamad, as you touched on there, towards the end of the innings, of the England innings. It's hard to know where to start. But yeah, Pakistan set 166 for four. I saw an ESPN headline just before we hopped on the pod that I think actually put it quite nicely. I think Pakistan arguably overvalued their wickets, whereas by contrast, England undervalued their wickets. I think that's a really nice way of putting this. Because Pakistan, the worry was, so I watched, I was playing football for the England innings, which is a shame, but I watched the Pakistan first innings, and you did feel like they just didn't kick on, right? Seemed like a gorgeous wicket at the start. Everyone thought this is one of the best pitches of the, potentially one of the best pitches of the series so far.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't quite kick on, right? Hamad, you know, Rizwan nearly got 100. He was there with 88, and he played, you know, he played nice innings, nice strike rate. But, you know, Babar was just around, and then Masood got stuck. It looked like he was, you know, he just couldn't find any kind of momentum. So he almost had a runnable 21 effectively, and he just didn't look in nick at all. And then Asif Ali came in and just showed the fans exactly what they've been doing, what they've been needing, scoring 13 off just those three balls. And something I always find, Hamad, is I feel T20 especially, it's one of those formats where the way you end an innings as the in the first half of the game really sets the tone for the second. I think if you end up in a chaotic way, as in obviously England lost, but the way England's ended in just shambles, I think it sets it up for the batters. But the way Pakistan ended it with those sixes off the last over and that monster six off the last ball, I think that really got the crowd really, really riled up. And they thought collectively, right, it's a total. We expect England to win and to win comfortably, but you just never know. Yeah. Zach, I mean, looking at this scorecard, it's chaos, really, isn't it? So as Hamad touched on, you know, Hasnain started brilliantly. He went from hero to zero effectively within this game, such as the cruelty of T20, really got Pakistan off to a flying start. And Zach, our top three didn't offer anything. Single figure scores for all of them. A duck, unfortunately, for Jax. Where did it go wrong, Zach? This is a total 167 is what England needed. I thought they'd do it at a canter. Where did it go wrong?
Well, I think it was good bowling at first from Hasnain. He's a very good bowler opening up. You know, he's not very good at the death, as we saw later on in this game, and it kind of showed his strengths and weaknesses all in one innings, which I think is something that Pakistan are able to counterbalance when they have Shaheen in the side, because Shaheen is, I mean, he's amazing. So I think the bowling side of Pakistan's game, I don't think they'll be that worried about, because they've got Harris Ruff playing really well, Nazim or Hasnain for that kind of power play quick, and then they've got Shaheen to come in who will just do it all. But yeah, with the batting for England, it just didn't really get started. And Duckett and Brook, another good partnership. Neither of them could kind of push on and keep and stay in. It really looked like it was all over, you know, when it was kind of David Willey batting. I understand that, you know, they brought David Willey in above Dawson, which I was surprised at first, but obviously it's kind of left-hand, right-hand thing. But yeah, and then Liam Dawson did, you know, Liam Dawson things. That's what he's been doing for Hampshire for years. He's been in, I feel like he's been in every single England squad for about the last 5 years. And every time you're kind of like, you're kind of like, oh, Liam Dawson's in the squad, is he? It's kind of like, oh, you know, he's that player who, his bowling's been pretty good in this. You know, he never seems to get hit for that many. And, you know, I've never really seen him bat for England like this. You know, I feel like that was quite a big performance for him. But, yeah, couldn't quite get us over the line, the kind of slow ball bumper causing him a problem that he just kind of like looped it up in the air after just smacking everyone around. Yeah, I feel like it's a difficult one. These games are all really close. It is worth noting that I think Pakistan's side in these games, other than Shaheen, is closer to their side will be in the World Cup than England's is. You know, England have probably got... We seem to be trying out a lot of players, which is good. Harry Brook, really, really impressive. We will talk more about him in due course because he, for me, he's in the World Cup team right now. But then, you know, you've got other players. Like I said, Dawson's not even in the main squad. Jax isn't in the main squad either. Hales will now probably play. But, you know, there's a lot of players missing. You've got no Butler, no Milan, no Stokes, who I presume will play. No idea how he'll do, but he will play. So, you know, it's not great from the batting side for England. And like you say, they did probably undervalue their wickets potentially. But again, that's just the difference in styles between these two teams. Pakistan seem to always overvalue their wickets. They've got a very good opening partnership. And it kind of always makes me think they should be so, so good at ODI cricket, Pakistan. But they don't seem to be, because those two at the top can just bat and bat and bat. And, you know, although they don't, like you said, Rizwan had a good innings. His innings was decent. Obviously, getting 88 is decent, but if you're facing 67 balls in a T20 game, you should be scoring 100, especially if you're as good as Rizwan. So his a 131 strike rate for that many balls is not that good. It's okay because they did obviously win, and if you have other players who can come in and go from ball one, which they do have some players like that, but Shaan Masood isn't one of those players. He's another player who wants to open the batting. He has recently tried to kind of, I think he was batting at four in the National T20 Cup that was recent. So he was doing that to try and be a number four, but it's not his natural game. I think he was the kind of third highest run scorer in the PSL a few years ago, third highest Pakistani run scorer in the PSL in maybe 2020. And it was like, oh, how's he not getting in the side? It's because, well, he's not Rizwan or Babar. They were the top two. Well, Babar was top and someone else was second. But yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's a struggle for them, and the middle order is kind of the big struggle.
Yeah,
that's definitely captured a lot of our sentiments around the matter from the Pakistani side, is that Shaan definitely is not, let's say, the most prolific in terms of strike rate, but he is trying to push up his game, which has been pretty nice to see. And he did sort of like show glimpses of that in the third one, where he sort of like got 60 odd out from 30. So he is capable of getting up that strike rate. I guess it was just not his day today.
Yeah, absolutely. That leads us nicely on, I think, to some of the kind of bigger picture takeaways from this series so far, because, you know, as you both alluded to, this is really important for the players, right? I think there's a lot of players, a lot of question marks, I would argue, in both teams going into the World Cup. I don't think either team has a completely fixed 11 due to injuries or form or anything else. So this has turned out, again, seven game series just seemed like a lot to me at first, but this has turned out to be a fantastic way for players to really, you know, stamp their authority on the team. And you can see that they've been really competitive games. Zach, so far from the England side, you've got Harry Brook being our top run scorer across the matches with 188 from his four innings. He's looked absolutely remarkable. Some of those shots, Zach, on Sunday, some of those, you know, kind of cover drives for six were just, you know, on a different planet. So he's averaging 94 in the series so far. And for us wicket takers, Adil Rashid, surprising no one, is up there with four. Zach, who's really made a mark for you on this series, and who is really bolstering their place potentially in not just the World Cup squad, but in the first game of the tournament in a couple of weeks?
So quickly before I move on to that, I think the seven game series, like you say, we were all kind of like 70-20s. Do we need to do this? But now I'm kind of thinking, if this was only five games, I'd be like, give me more, you know, because it's been so exciting. But, you know,
absolutely.
If England had gotten over the line in that game, on whatever day it was, the last game when they lost and it made it back to 2-2, rather than it being, if say it was 3-1 going into three more games, if England win one more, it's kind of game over. But it is very exciting. All the games have been pretty competitive, apart from, you know, we had that the game when England hit 220, which is where Harry Brook stood out, looked brilliant. Him and Ben Duckett's really kind of risen his stock as well, like his brilliant spin hitter. I don't think he's not going to get in the side for this World Cup, but I was kind of shocked to see him in the squad, even though he's been pretty good for a couple of years now. But he seems like he's kind of one of those players who I think is always kind of viewed as being very good for the county game, very good in the blast, but not good enough for England. Whereas Harry Brook, again, was worried that he was going to be the same, but, you know, he clearly has taken that step up and done really well.
Absolutely. I'm glad you pointed to Ben Duckett, Zach, because for me, watching this series, he's been pretty much Mr. Consistent. He has got, you know, something resembling a score, well, at least in three of the four innings. But, you know, 21's not nothing. So he's had 21, 43, a fantastic 17-odd out in that third game. And then even in this match, Zach, you know, he couldn't pull them over the line. I think that was the story of the whole team in the middle order. Everyone got a start on an innings, got into the 20s, 30s, then got out. But he still, you know, offered 33 for this game. I don't think, same as you, Zach, I don't think he's necessarily going to be, in the team necessarily. I know there's question marks in the squad, but as you said, he's shown that he can play spin remarkably well, and he's dominated when he's been batting. He's looked really, really confident. Zach, I think we'll bring him out into the conversation too, of course, but Zach, looking at the question marks for me right now, and we'll get into the, for listeners, we'll get into the squads we think or starting 11s in the second half of the pod, but purely from the series so far, the openers, I still feel it really isn't set in stone for England right now. How do you feel? Butler is, you know, not going to be fit enough to play the fifth game, I don't think, I read just before we hopped on. In terms of opening, maybe who would you like to see opening the next game, the fifth one? And do you think anyone's doing enough to really say this is my spot in a couple of weeks in the World Cup?
I think it's really interesting because Jax isn't in the main squad for the World Cup. He's only a reserve. So Jax won't be playing in that first game of the World Cup. He's looked decent, but again, he's looked inconsistent. When he was batting at 3 in the last game, you know, that's not his position. He hit 40 from 22 in the game before and looked really good. And that was his debut. So I think for me, it's probably going to be Hales, you know, no matter what we think about him coming back into the fold. His record in Australia is brilliant. So I think that will put him in there. I personally think it should be Milan who's been opening, because Milan's going to play, right? Milan will play. So Milan, I don't think we need to have him at 3. I think we should just have him opening, because that's what he's been doing all season for Trent Rockets in the 100 and doing it brilliantly. If he wasn't player of the tournament, then he probably deserved to be, but I don't know if he was. He was brilliant, just smacking the ball everywhere, really consistent, really good strike rate. And, you know, I think if he's going to play, then we should open with him and Butler. Nice left-hand, right-hand there. And then, because obviously also we've got Stokes. So Stokes is going to bat 4 potentially, which seems a bit low. I feel like they're all players who want to be in the top 3, or more so they want to open. And we've got a lot of batting. You know, we've got a lot of batting. We've got Livingston to come back. Moeen could bat higher. There's a lot there, so I don't necessarily think we need to have any of these people opening the batting, but we will have one of them, I presume.
That's a good point. Yeah, and I think it's a shame that, you know, Salt and obviously to an extent Hales, he chipped in with a 50, but nothing really beyond that, haven't really been able to cement their place in this team by any means. Hamad, watching England in this series so far, who for you has jumped out? And maybe who for you has really, I guess, shone and looked consistent across the games? Because I think beyond Harry Brook and maybe one or two of the bowlers, you might get there in a moment, it's been difficult. I mean, they've been rotating the teams as well, which makes it difficult to really show your consistency if you're in and out of the team by design. But who's jumped out for you that you've been watching the series so far?
I would definitely put Duckett up there. The fact that he's been playing spin so well means that he's definitely would be a top contender if you were playing anywhere in the subcontinent. So if you see tracks that have a bit of spin in them, and then I think you would potentially try to have Duckett in your squad as much as possible. I would say, yeah, I would agree with Zach in terms of the opening that it's not been, let's say, the best in the top three. But one of the things I guess I would probably sort of like push is that maybe not having sort of like a fixed top order of batsmen, or thinking about having a fixed order of batsmen, might not be the key, especially for T20s these days. One of the things that we keep hearing these days is that your lineup should be as fluid as possible to take care of the situation. So rather than thinking about in terms of position, you might want to think about phases of the game. So if you have players that start slow but have a potential to go deep and hard at the end, then you might want to start them up earlier. Other than if you have people that can just shoot up as quick as possible, maybe you can leave them up to the later of the innings. So, and again, who do you expect to be bowling in the time when you're sending somebody in? Is it going to be the spinners? Is it going to be pacers? Who are you going to send up? It tends to be always about matchups, at least in T20.
Absolutely, and that's something that you know you've told me over the weekend that Pakistan fans have been calling for even within their team.
Yeah.
And look at the Pakistan team just in this series so far. Obviously, you've had the four games. So Mohammad Rizwan, as we all know his talent, we all know his quality with both the bat and the gloves. He is running away with top run scorer right now. He's about 60 odd above Harry Brook. He's had four innings. He's got a remarkable average of 84. So he's been doing fantastic. And then Harris Rolfe, who you touched on, is the highest wicket taker across both teams in the series with six and a really impressive average of just 20. He's been really showing his value in terms of pace, in terms of death bowling. He is going to be really, really good in Australia, you feel. Ahmad, who's emerged from this series with more credit for you so far? And who has maybe been slightly disappointing for you?
Well, I would say, at least for instance, Khushdil has not been doing any favors to his position in this side. Whether that's a victim of circumstance or just the fact that he is not in his top nick. But there has always been a situation of where people have been like, you're not sending Khushdil in at the right time. We've seen that he tends to need a bit of time to set in before he can start hitting. So sending him around the time where he only managed to get like six or seven balls or has to start hitting from ball one is not necessarily a forte. So you would try to push, let's say, in a ideal situation, if you're near the end of the innings, you would push Asif over Khushdil. And then there are also situation of like, you have accumulators sort of like at the top of the innings. When one of them gets out, why are you sending another accumulator? And let's say Shaan Masood, for instance. So maybe Khushdil would be a better situation in those send in those kind of situations. As far as who is sort of like stood up, I would say Shaan should get a proper knock at it. He's shown his sort of like his caliber in the 60 that he scored in the third match. And it's just a matter of not getting into nick in that. But I would see what the idea was with sending him in after Babar is that Babar will tend to kick on after he gets in. And Shaan Masood has shown that he can start to get kick on from the beginning. Although, but not necessarily like Asif Ali pace, but still kick on quick enough. So I would sort of like try to give him an excellent run. Disappointment wise, I think Haider Ali would be one in that in the two games that he managed to play, he couldn't really get on, kept getting hurried by faster bowlers and not necessarily getting his eye in, which is a bit unfortunate. A lot of people really want him to succeed and be there and sort of like have an answer to sort of like our fourth or third batsman situations where we can send in somebody who can score hard and fast. And we don't know. But given the fact that Fakhar is traveling in reserves, so he's probably not, may not be, but he tends to have a more permanent position in the lineup than most other people.
Absolutely. Zach, anything to add just there?
Yeah, so with the travelling reserves, worth noting, it means that they can't come into the squad unless someone gets injured.
Yeah.
Which is strange. And like, so, I mean, for Australia, we're not talking about Australia. Obviously, Cam Green's been brilliant for them the last few games, not in the squad at all. So can't come in unless someone gets injured. So there's a few interesting things. And it's the same with Duckett and Dawson for England. They can't come in unless someone gets injured, which I think is strange. I think just, why don't we just have bigger squads? Always wondered that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really see the point. But yeah, I think on the Pakistan side, it's interesting because Shadab Khan is just a big miss in both sides, because bowling wise, Usman Khedira in the spin side, you know, all of England's players' leg spin stats look brilliant in this series because it's been Usman Khedira who has been he's not been great, to be honest.
He bowls kind of a few wickets.
He's got four wickets, but yeah, he bowls a long hop, first ball of the over, kind of being a half tracker. You know, there's at least kind of like two hit me balls and over, which is not good enough in international T20 cricket.
Yeah.
So it makes everyone's spin stats look good. And Shadab Khan is a far better bowler. He's also a very good spin hitter himself, which is something that Kushdil is certainly not a good spin hitter. Asif Ali, not really that good a spin hitter either. Iftikhar, again, none of them are good spin hitters. The only other one who's decent is Nawaz, who obviously was... He was pushed up the order in one of the Asia Cup games. And I'm interested to see against India. And that worked really well. And I'm interested to hear, Hamad, what you think about that and whether that should be something that's looked at for the World Cup. Because in my 11, he's there, but he's batting pretty low down. But to be flexible and be able to be flexible with that and kind of always try and have, in the middle overs, if you can always try and have one of Shadab and Nawaz and then one with you know, hopefully Rizwan or Baba, but if they're out, then, you know, Iftikhar, Asif or...
Kushdil
is what we're talking about. Because, Kushdil was brilliant in the PSL.
Yeah.
Brilliant at hitting pace. And I think that will be more of a thing in Australia. I think spin's going to get battered a bit in Australia, as it always does. Mm-hmm. We're expecting high-scoring games, which I think sometimes... isn't Pakistan style, but then I think it does sometimes mean if there's all high scoring games, your bowling attack is more important, and the bowling, we're not really worrying about the bowling side for Pakistan. So I do wonder what you think about the kind of Nawaz promoting thing. That was my question before I rambled on there.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the things that I would like Pakistan to do more, is what I alluded to before, was that the batting lineups need to be flexible based on the situation. And definitely Nawaz or Shadab should be somebody that you should be sending up higher up, especially in the middle overs when there's spin on, and you could have either of those being hitting in conclusion with somebody else who is sticking on, who maybe can hit pace if there's pace being sent on the other side. Definitely. Nawaz and Shadab are definitely in there in the squad. I guess at least for Shadab, they're resting him a bit more to make sure that he's top. And they also want to give Usman Khedira a bit more time to play in, get into rhythm and all of that, so that he also tends to have the skills. It's just a matter of like getting enough rhythm and practice in to make sure that he not keeps hitting those long hops so consistently in his overs.
Exactly that. I think we're leading nicely on to looking at some squads, which we're going to do in part two. So stay tuned for that in just a moment. Before we make that transition, Hamad and Zach, we're tied up at 2-2. As we've said, it's been great. I mean, I could talk about just purely this series for another half hour, but I want to look at the tournament writ large. Three more games to go. Change of venues, if I'm not mistaken, coming up as well. Hamad, what does this look like when all seven games have been played? What is your final score? And Zach, afterwards, what do you think?
I would definitely go with a 4-3. Either way, I would not put it against Pakistan if they lose against at the end. Who really cares about bilateral T20s these days, I guess. But at the same time, definitely it's there for Pakistan to win it. And Lahore is definitely a venue.
Absolutely. And just one thing on that, one thing I really noticed watching back the game last night, you say, and, you know, with good reason, you know, who kind of cares about bilateral T20 series? You know, they just kind of come and go. The fans, Hamad, I mean, they were absolutely fantastic. It felt to me like the final of a domestic league or a World Cup match. It was unbelievable. The atmosphere, wickets, you know, celebrated with, you know, such energy. So I love that. So although I agree, long bilateral series usually aren't like the biggest talking point for fans, this one has been absolutely top notch. Zach, where are you kind of landing on this? Hamad did hedge his bets, so give me a winner. I don't want to maybe this, maybe that. What do you think?
No, I'm going 4-3 England, and here's my reasoning. I think England have got, so in the first couple games we had not a first choice pace attack out at all. We've still not got, you know, still a few people being rested. Jordan's not going to play a game, but we did have Topley and Wood back in, who I expect, as we will come on to in part two, to play a big role in Australia for us. So I think with Topley and Wood back, our bowling is better. Simple as, I think they're better than the people who were playing the first couple games. So I think we will win it, particularly with Butler. Butler's going to come in like the seventh game and just be in really good form, fingers crossed, because if he's in bad form, then the T20 World Cup in Australia is not going to go very well.
Absolutely. It's a nice place to leave part one. I'm going to agree with you, Zach. I think England have got enough in the tank in terms of reserves and rotation to win this. But, you know, Hamad, to speak to your point, I wouldn't be surprised if Pakistan win it. And part of me kind of wants them to win because it's been so thrilling, because the fans have turned up so much. I kind of love to see Pakistan win this. So anyway, a brilliant series. You know, I cannot wait for the next game. Three more to go. And we will see how it unfolds. That's going to be about
finish on your point about the crowd on that. Karachi has been sort of like been derided by a lot of Pakistani fans. It's like Karachi doesn't turn up to games. There are games in PSL where we see stands empty and on. And Karachi is basically sort of like given a fitting answer to all of that and be like, we're here sellouts for all four games. Turn up.
Absolutely. I mean, sellouts plus. I think they said on the comms on Sunday that there was definitely more, if you include people kind of watching outside as well. Yeah, absolutely. More than 30K. I'm surprised, Hamad. I'm surprised that Karachi's come under fire, because I've thought with every game it's been an electric atmosphere. And yeah, as you said, to sell out four games, that takes some doing. That takes a really passionate local fan base. So credit. Yes, I can see you smiling there. But yeah, on the record, fantastic fans, fantastic location. And we will leave part one there and come back in just a moment to look ahead to the World Cup and our kind of two predicted 11s for Pakistan and England.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Rainstock Play. I'm joined by Hamad and Zach today. It's been a lot of fun so far. We've been reflecting on the seven-game bilateral series between Pakistan and England. Obviously, four of those having been played, three to go. And now we're going to kind of, I guess, shift our attention over to Australia with the World Cup starting there in a couple of weeks in October. we're going to kind of fold in what we've learnt or what we think we've learnt from this series so far directly into the World Cup and really look at both teams and assess who we think is going to be in that 11 for the first game. I imagine there'll be a bit of debate. I hope there might be a little bit of disagreement as well. So that'll be a lot of fun. Zach, I am going to come to you first purely because I think you have really kind of alluded to parts of your 11 in the first half of the pod for England. So I'm really intrigued just to see you talk it through. I think there's a lot of question marks here, especially in the order of batters. And Hamad, I am attentive to your point about maybe having a more fluid team. So potentially, Zach, potentially it doesn't matter quite as much who might be, say, 4, 5, 6, if we're going to take that approach. So I'll be interested to see if you think that will work. But yeah, with that in mind, for you, who do you think is going to be starting the first game of the World Cup in a few weeks?
So 1 to 11. I think first game we will go with Hales and Butler to open. Milan to bat at 3. Stokes at 4. Brook at 5. Livingston 6. Moeen 7. With some flexibility in there, as obviously Moeen is our best spin hitter. And then number 8 is interesting. I think we'll probably go Jordan for the first game because we want to shore up at the death a little bit. Rashid 9, Wood 10, Topley 11. I think it is worth noting in there that obviously we've got 3 spare bowlers, but also Mark Wood is not going to play every single game because of injury records and the like. So those bowlers, Wokes, Willie and Curran, will all get a go. I think it's a slightly different approach if you bring in one of them, but you would probably bring in one of them and still want Jordan in the side because of the death bowling. None of them, Wokes, Willie and Curran, not very good at the death, any of them, all pretty good in the power play. So yeah, that's my side then.
Good stuff. I like it. I've got a few thoughts, but I want to hear what Hamad has to say first. What are you thinking of that, Hamad? Obviously, it's a bit rough. There's still question marks in there, but what are your initial kind of thoughts from that right now?
I think it seems to be a pretty decent lineup from what I would think about. I'm not sure what happened to Jason Roy. Is he traveling with the World Cup squad or not? Not at all.
He is not traveling at all. He's out of the squad and not even in the traveling reserves.
On the no-fly list. He's banned. Yeah. He's banned from international travel for the duration of the World Cup. It's a good question, Matt. Because he was as much of a lock-in for the opening spot as probably any member of the England team in terms of position over the last couple of years. And yeah, his, as you're more than aware, his domestic form fell off a cliff across tournaments, across the Blast, across the 100. And as Robert Key, I think it was the person, Rob Key was the person to say it. Unfortunately for Roy, he lost form at the worst possible time as an England player, which is just before a tournament. I'm intrigued by the opening too. Zach, I agree. I do think it'll be Hales and Butler. Is there a case, maybe Hamad or Zach, for Stokes to be elevated up to open and that frees up a spot in the middle order? Maybe if Hales doesn't get another score in this series in the final 3 games, what do you think to that?
That would be a bold decision to me. I think Stokes tends to like coming in lower. I feel like that I've not necessarily seen a lot of him batting in T20s recently, but from what I've sort of like gathered, he tends to like be more of a biffer. So he could be there to sort of like give a late innings impetus usually, but I guess Zach would know better on that regard.
Well, I think it's completely understandable that you haven't seen much of him because he hasn't played a T20 he hasn't played a T20I in years. I don't even think he's played a T20 in over a year. So no one knows what form he's in, what sort of where he wants to bat, where he's best batting. I think he's probably best batting in the top 3 or batting as a finisher. If he were to just come in and, like you say, smack pace around. He's not the best player of spin in T20 cricket. You know, we've all seen the shots he can play. He's got all the shots, but the strike rate can be a little bit lacking against spin. I think he either bats in the top 3. I think he probably will bat 4 and it might look a little bit scratchy. I'm worried for how Ben Stokes is going to look. That's the position I'm most worried about in this lineup. Well, not the In the batting lineup, yes, the bowling is very worrying on the other side. But in the batting lineup, it's the most worrying one because I feel like he could look scratchy. And we play Afghanistan in that first game and they've got a lot of spinners and they've got some very good spinners. So he's gonna get a scratchy kind of 10 from 12 in that game. Early predictions for you there, Glenn.
Excellent, excellent analysis. I really love it, and it's great work to bring the first fixture in. That's going to be an absolute cracking game, Afghanistan. I'm really looking forward to that. Zach, not maybe a bit of devil's advocate here, but you just said about three different question marks over Stokes's role in the team. Are we? Why are we presupposing perhaps that he's definitely guaranteed of a spot at all?
I think our squad predisposes that he's guaranteed a spot. The only spare batter is Salt. So Salt won't. And I'd be shocked if we bat Salt at 4 or 5. We tried it in the
West
Caribbean
Indies
earlier this year. Yeah, and it didn't work. No. So I think either Salt or Hales. I think Salt is a very kind of he's quite a good direct replacement for Jason Roy. Salt will always kind of go at a high strike rate, basically. He won't necessarily last very long, but he will get you off to a good start. How often is Salt scored 8 runs in the first over, at least? You know, like that's kind of the way he bats, and it's the way Jason Roy bat as well. So I think he was more of a direct replacement, but I think with them bringing Hales in and Hales' record in Australia, they will go with Hales. The Stokes one is simply that we don't have anyone else to bat there, unless we were to go bowling heavy, which I would potentially do, and go and have someone like Willie or Wokes at 7, which I think is fine. But obviously, if in your top 7 you can already have overs from Stokes, Livingston and Moeen, I mean, I think it gives a freedom if you then have a number 7 who is a specialist power play bowler, kind of someone like Wokes who will bowl 2 or 3 in the power play and then won't need to bowl their 4. I'm fine with that, but I don't think England are going to go with that. I think England, throughout the last World Cup, they were a little bit conservative with it, and they had someone like that batting at 8, which is a bit low. But then, obviously, they're not, you know, none of them have been kind of amazing in their batting recently. So, but they are kind of all players who can bat, you know. They're good kind of test number 8s. Is what I think about it as, but
absolutely, yeah. This is great. And okay, so yeah, you know, batting, maybe it just feels like we're a little bit light in terms of options there, which feels like a surprise. We're basically, we've got the kind of paradox, right, Zach, where we're kind of, there's too many players who seem to do a similar job, this kind of big middle order hitter. We're completely, there's an embarrassment of riches right there, but then in some of the other key positions, i.e. you know, maybe opening 2, i.e. maybe number 4 is a tricky one in T20. If you're not an opener or a finisher, it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I would have, I think 6 is, as I've written in the notes, I think 6 is too low for Livingston. I think we should have, I think Livingston and Moeen should both be kind of floaters depending on the game situation and who's still in. If it's someone like Butler still in, then potentially go Livingston, because Butler, although he's a brilliant hitter of pace, is also pretty good at hitting spin. I mean, spin is his weakness, but you know, he's still very good at hitting both. So I think someone like, say, if it's someone else still in, someone who's a very good pace hitter like Alex Hales, then you bring in Moeen, because then it's, you can't really be kind of match up out of the game almost with that. But then, but like with Pakistan, I want us to be able to be flexible. Moeen hasn't been coming in this series, even though he's been captaining. He's been coming in at 7, and it's been kind of consistent. He comes in at 7 or 6 when he's been batting at 6. But I think during these games, Moeen should have been coming in ahead of Brook a couple of times. Although Brook's been brilliant, and Brook actually played spin brilliantly. Lots of comparisons with Suryakumar Yadav, which I love. Mm-hmm. And he's been just quality. It wasn't expected, and Moeen is still a better spin hitter. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think if there's someone who, you know, if against Afghanistan, for example, Moeen shouldn't bat at 7. Moeen should bat at 4 or 5, basically.
Absolutely. I mean, I've heard Livingston, a pundit or two, mentioned even at number 7, which feels just like a complete waste of his talents. Really interesting stuff in the batting. I love it. Looking at the bowling, I think you sounded a little bit more concerned there. Just to reiterate, I guess going backwards from 11 backwards here, we've got Topley, Wood, Rashid, and then we've got 4 names. We've got Wokes, Willie, Curran, Jordan. Zach, what is your concern about this bowling lineup as we look forward to the World Cup? Where's it looking a little bit more vulnerable potentially in those conditions?
I mean, in one kind of phrase, we've got a Jofra Archer shaped hole, simply as. But that's kind of that you could say that about any bowling attack in any team.
Every
because
team
Jofra
does.
Archer is exactly, and it's similar. It's different, but it's similar to how Pakistan's bowling attack has looked good in this series. But it would be world class if Shaheen was there, and it's a similar thing. Shaheen is so good that he will make any attack better, and the same with Archer. Archer, but primarily at the death. Archer, he kind of converted himself into being able to be really good in the power play recently, as well as being good at the death. But it's at the death where we miss him, because we've got Topley's pretty good at the power play, kind of comes in from a good height, left arm angle.
He's been great.
Good kind of seam movement there. And then Wood, it's been very, very expensive at the death. Bowled absolute wheels the other day, 97 miles an hour. I think it was the fastest.
Yeah.
It was the fastest over ever by an England pacer. Obviously, the records only began in 2004, but still pretty bloody quick considering he's just coming back from injury.
Outrageous. So, yeah.
But again, they're very good at either starting the innings or in the middle order. Chris Jordan, who knows which Chris Jordan we're going to get. He had a better summer when he played at kind of grounds that had big kind of wide boundaries, which is kind of the type of ground you think of when you think of Australia. They have big grounds. So he was kind of going for the kind of harder lengths, like back of a length and tucking up batters. And they were struggling to hit him away because there's big square boundaries. But whenever he goes back to Yorkers, it doesn't work anymore. It doesn't seem to work anymore. Like it used to be his thing. He would bowl six Yorkers in a row at the death and it would be his thing. But now that doesn't seem to work. If he can stick with the kind of back of a length, then maybe he'll be okay. But I think we're going to lose a couple of games because of our death bowling, as we did the semi-final last year in the World Cup. So I think that's where we're really worried. And also, if Adil Rashid's shoulder gives up at any point within the next
game
2
over.
To 3 years, we're
don't,
done
don't bother
for.
Getting yeah, on the plane. Don't bother getting on the plane. Yeah. Hamad, thank you, Zach, for putting that 11 together. Going to come back to you in just a second for your Pakistan 11 and then open up the conversation there. But Hamad, just real quick, looking at that England team, what do you think? Where do you think this England team might be lacking? Would you agree with Zach's kind of criticism that potentially the death bowling is a weak spot? And then, yeah, that this middle order, it almost feels a bit messy, the fact that there's just such talent in there. I do feel it's going to be really difficult to get the best out of that top seven, if not impossible. I'd say it's probably impossible to get the best out of them. So you've probably got to pick the players for the occasion, as you're mentioning matchups. But yeah, Hamad, yeah. When you look at this team or you hear it, what are your thoughts?
Well, definitely there's a dearth of batting talent. There's too much batting talent for my liking, so much so that it sort of like sometimes muddles up the roles that the players mm-hmm. feel that they might have, because you're not entirely sure of which position you're going to get in, even sort of like narrowing it down to two or three positions. So that I think sometimes may muddle up a situation, but it seems like at least for batting side, other players tend to cover up for other players, so you still manage to get somewhere decent. Bowling side, I would tend to agree with Zach in a lot of places, is that death bowling definitely feels a bit lacking. You definitely don't have enough people that can bowl pace at the death, and to pace like that, that is essentially very hard to put away. Of course, you had Chris Jordan who had his experience with the Yorkers, but that seems to have fallen away. But he doesn't have, I guess, the pace that would sort of like not necessarily necessary relying on those Yorkers a lot also. But definitely, I guess this is just you're sort of like also missing somebody like Plunkett used to when he later on became that canny bowler with variations that was very hard to get away. So I think you're sort of like missing that kind of a bowler that can just not necessarily rely on pace, but rely on while and wit to sort of like keep batsmen from scoring away. And definitely not having sort of have a Adil Rashid replacement could be not a great situation, which I guess like they're sort of like trying to get Dawson sort of like that role where he can sort of like also play as the other spinner. But yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's a tough one. What's interesting is read a piece. I mean, it's in a kind of more test context that Will Jacks is being looked at as more as attempting to work on his bowling to be maybe more of a Moeen Ali figure, right, where he can do a job with both. But yeah, purely in the context of a couple of weeks' time for a World Cup, we are a little bit light in that department. Great stuff. Will, I'll come back just towards the end with maybe a prediction for how far we think England will go at this point in time. We'll do a full preview pod for the World Cup, of course, in due course. Zach, would you mind running through your lightly Pakistan 11, and then we will take it to our one-man jury, which is Hamad, to see his thoughts. But who have you got? This is a really interesting team. A lot of question marks for me in that middle order of Pakistan.
So, yeah, I think it is worth noting that before I start running through this, numbers 3 to 7 I left until the end and was like, who knows, basically. Don't know which order they're going to go in.
Just half the team.
I think the team, you know, a few of them are pretty kind of like, you know, there's a few of the players I expect will play, but what position they'll be in is very open. So Babar and Rizwan to open, very few surprises there. Potentially Shaun Masood. I've got Shaun Masood / Haider Ali at number 3, because I think Hamad's going to go Shaun Masood, and I probably do agree with that, because Haider Ali hasn't been very good in this series. I've then got Kushdil at 4, Asif Ali 5, Iftikhar 6, Shadab 7, Nawaz 8. So you're back deep. You're back pretty deep. Obviously, as we've said, would expect Shadab and Nawaz to float up the order to be spin hitters. Harris Ralph, Shaheen Shah Afridi, Nazim Shah are my three bowlers, my three pace bowlers, who I think are arguably the best pace attack in the tournament coming up. So, you know, that's going to be a lot of fun on, we expect, fast, bouncy pitches.
Yeah, I think the three bowlers and the opening batters, as you said, the quality is magnificent. I think the real question mark remains that kind of the middle of that sandwich in between them, right? Hamad, here in that team, you know, what are your thoughts? Do you think that's going to be something similar to what you're expecting to see? Have we forgotten someone key?
I would definitely agree with a lot of this. I would say maybe you would sort of like switch out Nasim with Dahani or Mohammad Wasim, depending upon what you want, because Mohammad Wasim can also hit. So he can definitely be also like an extra batsman if you need it on the occasion. Definitely the main question marks are over the order in which Khushdil, Asif and Iftikhar come in. Iftikhar definitely has been getting, and Khushdil has been getting a lot more support to be in the team more consistently. They're sort of like being the only ones in the battle order that have been pretty much there for the whole four matches so far also. So I think there is a situation of like the management saying that we are keeping the faith in you. So we want you to keep going out there. But I think rather than more so of the lineup of the Pakistan team, it's a more of a matter of like, how do they better utilize them? Is that how are you utilizing Nawaz and Asif and Shadab? Are you putting them up when the situation requires, or are you keeping with the static lineup? Because that sort of like was the situation in the Asia Cup, is that when you kept your lineup static, you ran into some situations in which your bowlers had to bail you out. But if you brought some of these lower order players up, then you saw more success, like for instance with Nawaz and Shadab in the Nawaz in the India game and Shadab in the Afghanistan game. I would agree with Zach's lineup. Maybe I would just not keep Heather in. Sean is probably going to be my Fakhar replacement, but I would not necessarily send Sean in the middle overs per se, as would maybe Nawaz or Shadab, depending on the situation.
Absolutely. And give Asif some more time just to smash it. I mean, he's got it in the locker, and I think it's really interesting. He's one of those players, I feel, right, Hamad, that can hit from ball one the same way arguably Liam Livingstone or whoever else for England tries to. Zach, would you agree with that then? I think that was a pretty popular side from for Hamad. I think you're in pretty much broad agreement there.
Yeah, I like the idea of having Wazim as kind of a number eight, and I think that could be potentially something I would maybe go with as kind of, it would be a really bowling heavy side if you had Wazim at eight, those three paces 9, 10, 11, and you still had Nawaz and Shadab. It could be a case of they kind of go, instead of Nawaz, they go Wazim as kind of a, if it looks like it's going to be really flat, spin's going to get smacked, then they could go just with Shadab and then the four paces, and it's a pretty good attack that. And like you say, Wazim can hit the ball. I completely agree. I think Masood will probably get there, but I do think that kind of getting, I think the problem for Pakistan is going to be if someone gets a hold of their bowlers, I think you're going to, like, hitting 200 or 210 consistently is something that Pakistan haven't done basically for a long time. I know they did do it, and they hit 200 in knocks of 200 without losing a wicket in one of the games in this series, but it's not something they do consistently. And that's kind of down to partly, I think, Babar and Rizwan can get them off to good starts, and then don't kind of, they push on with the runs, but they don't necessarily push on and up the strike rate as much as you would expect. So like we said with the Rizwan innings, and I think Babar's had some pretty poor form recently, obviously did score a ton in this series, but it's been a little bit inconsistent. And kind of what you don't want is both of them being you don't really want to be 40 without loss at the end of power play, and both of them are kind of 20 from 20 almost, something that's kind of, it's not good. It's not good enough. And that is in itself, although it might look good because they've both of those guys have scored runs again, you are then putting pressure on a less experienced middle order because they're having to kind of pick up the slack. So I do think although they're both brilliant players, the kind of acceleration from them and the kind of, it's difficult because obviously they also can't accelerate if wickets are tumbling around them. So I think it's difficult, but I think they will. I think Pakistan will do pretty well in this tournament, but they will struggle to hit 200. And if someone like, so India in their group, South Africa in their group, someone gets a hold of a couple of their bowlers, then they could struggle.
We need to get Surya Kumara out as quick as possible. You can't let him stick around.
I think that's what every team's thinking for playing India. You want to keep Kohli and Rahul in as much as possible and stop Suryakumar having time to just bat, because he's the best batter in the world at the moment. So he's so good.
Good stuff. It's a lot of interesting conversations here. As we get towards the end of the pod, going to ask you both a pretty simple question. Again, there's a few weeks till the first ball is bowled in the World Cup. But based on what we've seen in this series, based on, more importantly, what we know about these two teams before the series, because again, there's been loads of rotation, where do we think, how far, I guess, into the tournament, how deep into the tournament do we think both these teams will make it? I imagine both get past group stage, that'd be the hope, but are we thinking how far through the knockout process and potentially looking towards the final and even winning it? If you think Pakistan or England have a good shot of winning it, let us know as well. Hamad, gonna start with you. Pakistan, England, where do you see them based on just what you know right at this moment in time? I'm sure this can change before we start the tournament, but how far do you think they're both going to get?
I would put Pakistan near the semifinals as much as possible, simply because of the fact that they have the bowling stocks to get there. Simply because Australia is good for fast bowlers. Pakistan has some of the best fast bowlers, and more often than not, the bowling has been called up to win the games for Pakistan, and they tend to do. So I would say anything less than a semifinal would be very bad for Pakistan. And for England, I would say I think they have a pretty good shot of getting to the final itself. And they obviously, Australia is also pretty good for batting, and they have the batters for miles to do so. Batters with experience in Australian conditions, and so yeah, that I would sort of like put that to be the situation in terms of where I place the teams.
All right, semi-final Pakistan, potentially final for England. Zach, would you agree or switch those around? What do you think? Bit more of English pessimism, I might imagine.
I'm going to be slightly more pessimistic on both teams. Uh-huh. And that is more to do with the fact that both teams are going, that there's some good teams. I don't think anyone looks like standout amazing in this tournament. India should be standout better than everyone else, but they're simply not at the moment. Bumrah coming back in will be big for them. But I think England will get to the semi-final because our group is slightly weaker, I think, as long as we beat Afghanistan. And we've got New Zealand who, I mean, obviously they made the final last time, but I don't think they're looking up to much. And then Australia in our group. So I think we will get through the group, but we will lose in the semi-finals to India, probably, because if we finish second in our group, then they will likely win their group. And then for Pakistan, I think South Africa looked pretty good in South Africa or in Pakistan's group. So as I was saying before we came on air, Pakistan, South Africa is both of their last or penultimate game in the group. So that is absolutely huge for both teams. And I think South Africa could win that and go through to the semi-finals. And obviously South Africa won't win anything because they can't win ICC tournaments. They're physically unable. But I do think Pakistan will bow out in the group just about. But if it's all down to the pace bowling, then no one's got better pace bowling than Pakistan. I think it's going to be an interesting tournament. And I feel like they've scheduled some of the games better this time round. So we play, because last time it felt like all of the good games were front loaded. And although we have India, Pakistan right at the start, that's one of the first games, we do have Pakistan, South Africa, that kind of, which is a very important game right towards the end, which will be interesting.
Yeah. Spot on. And as we're pretty much at the end of the pod, and you're talking about the schedule of the World Cup, Zach, I think it's time for you to share some big news with the listeners. Where are you going to be watching some of the World Cup games from, Zach?
So I am actually moving to Sydney in less than 2 weeks, which is very soon. 2 weeks yesterday, and I will be watching some of the World Cup games. I will be there. I'm going to be there for three of the games at the SCG at least, and I'm going to the final at the MCG. So very excited, looking forward to it, and yeah, let's hope England can be there in the final and I can see them lift the trophy.
That would be absolutely remarkable, and that's very exciting news. Regards to the pod, we're gonna have to try and work three time zones together. We will see what we can do. I'm sure we'll do our best to make it happen in some way. But yeah, that's amazing news. And honestly, Zach, no better time to be going. Zach actually timed his trip, spoke to his fiance and said we're gonna be moving there just before the World Cup starts, and I've already booked us tickets to four games. So really good stuff there. And yeah, that's a lovely note to end the pod on. Hamad, thank you so much for joining us, a bit of passion, some expertise. I always love talking cricket with you. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm definitely not one of the more prolific experts out there, as we could say, but definitely always happy to talk cricket with the guys here.
Modest too, we love it. And Zach, the next time we talk on the pod, I imagine you'll be sat in your gorgeous new place in Australia, so we can't wait for that. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Glenn. Yeah, look forward to it.
Yeah, and listeners, I'm sure we'll be having a much more in-depth World Cup preview pretty soon. It is just around the corner in mid-October, so looking forward to that. Stay tuned for our big preview. It's always fun. We really enjoyed doing it for the last one. So yeah, keep your eye out for that. And until then, thank you very much for listening.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.